Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. The Alaska Dispatch News has a new owner. The Dispatch reports that a federal bankruptcy judge in Anchorage yesterday approved sale of the newspaper and website to the Binkley family of Fairbanks. The $1 million sale price is the same amount the Binkleys loaned the paper's former owner, Alice Rogoff, to keep it afloat after the operation filed for bankruptcy earlier this summer. No other bidders emerged to buy the Dispatch. Ryan Binkley and Jason Evans, owner of Alaska Media LLC, have been publishing the paper since the loan agreement. They anticipate layoffs at the paper and website operations, which have been running in the red. The Fairbanks City Council last night advanced an ordinance addressing contaminated groundwater on the city's south side. If approved, the ordinance would appropriate $100,000 for connecting affected residents to city water, plus two yearly stipends of up to $2,500. The contamination was caused by perfluorinated compounds and fire-suppressing foam leaked into groundwater around a city-operated regional fire training center between 1984 and 2004. Several people complained at last night's council meeting that the ordinance doesn't do enough to help people affected by the contamination. Fatima Mancuso-Lord says the stipends fall short.
I don't know how you guys came up with the 2 years. That's not what I was asking for or what I think is fair for the people who are exposed. At the bare minimum, I think maybe it should be for the time period that people were living in their residence while they're being exposed.
Mancuso-Lord says the city should calculate stipends based on how many years people have lived in the area and been exposed to the water contamination. Ordinance co-sponsors council members David Pruse and June Rogers acknowledge the concern many have about being exposed to contamination.
We're dealing with a highly emotional issue of both health and people's properties that were contaminated.
Mm-hmm. Pruse urged residents who talked to the council to read the ordinance and come back to speak again during a public hearing and final vote scheduled for a September 25th council meeting. More than half of Alaska students failed to meet proficiency standards in test results recently released by the State Board of Education. The tests measured how well students were meeting Alaska standards in language arts, math, and science. But as KUAC's Robert Hannon reports, the tests provide teachers little insight on how to correct the problem.
Dr. Stephen Atwater is interim dean of the University of Alaska Fairbanks' School of Education. He says he was concerned to see the results of the performance evaluation for Alaska schools released 2 weeks ago. Atwater says the test vendor, DRC, has a proven track record in Alaska.
There's no question that they've done a good job with the validity of those questions.
Further, he says Alaska educators were consulted on where to set the bar on whether students were proficient or not, called cut scores.
Now, is there some subjectivity to that? Absolutely. There has to be. And there's no denial that those cut scores may be off a little bit one way or the other.
But Atwater says the results were serious. Some schools failed to show any students were proficient. The big question for school administrators is now how to evaluate whether their district's curricula are adequately addressing the state standards. And on that score, he says, the tests are particularly vexing to classroom teachers.
Okay, you're telling us that only 30% of my students are proficient, but I don't get the analysis of what they're not proficient in at a deep enough level to affect my instruction.
Atwater agrees with those who say the proficiency test is just one data point in capturing how well Alaska students are performing. And he says school administrators draw on other metrics to evaluate how much to adjust curricula. But since the state proficiency tests are tied to federal funding, they will remain a public measure of school performance for the foreseeable future. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
The Alaska Department of Corrections is trying to turn around a statistic that shows two-thirds of people who leave state prisons end up coming back within 3 years. The department is trying to change that by teaching inmates marketable trades. Alaska Public Media's Ann Hillman reports.
So what we're going to do is take less than about a 16th of an inch off the lip of this.
Wesley Nickel picks up a thin slat of wood he's using to build a planter box, then slides it into the saw. He's worked in construction before, but he's never done such highly precise carpentry work. It's just one of the many skills he's trying to learn as he nears the end of his sentence at Wildwood Correctional Center in Kenai. Nickel says it's an important supplement to the substance abuse treatment he's received.
To be able to come here and do the hands-on woodwork, welding, and stuff to keep my hands busy, I feel ready to go on the to be a productive when I get out.
Nickel has been in and out of prison for about 12 years, mostly for drug-related crimes. He developed an addiction to opioids after a couple of severe injuries. In the past, he was released without feeling like he developed any skills or support systems in prison.
The last time I got out looking for work, getting turned away multiple times, it got extremely frustrating.
Which is what Department of Corrections staff, like vocational instructor Tim Ward, are trying to prevent.
The whole hope is that they can get out of prison, get a job, and not come back.
Wildwood Superintendent Shannon McLeod says the vocational education program is just an example of ways corrections institutions across Alaska are trying to be more than just punitive warehouses for people.
What can we do to put out a better product than what we received?
And moving on is exactly what Nickel is doing. When we meet again, 1 month after I interviewed him in prison, it's at a bustling coffee shop in South Anchorage. He released from Wildwood a week earlier. Through his family, he's already received some job offers based on the certifications he earned at Wildwood.
It helps. It makes me a lot more confident while I'm job searching, that's for sure.
He also has a full ride to college starting in January, thanks to the help of his native corporations. Nickel says it's the first time in 6 years he's released from prison, prepared and sober.
I spontaneously smile. I spontaneously catch myself laughing because I can't. It's hard to believe it's real sometimes.
He says he's scared, but ready. From the Solutions Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
Use of unmanned aerial vehicles in the north is the focus of a meeting in Fairbanks this week. The University of Alaska Fairbanks Alaska Center for Unmanned Aircraft Systems Integration is hosting industry representatives to talk about UAV-based operations in the Arctic.
It's everything from wildlife monitoring to looking at sea ice.
Center Director Kathy Cahill says unmanned aircraft opportunities are growing as the technology is well-suited to Alaska and the Arctic.
You know, the long distances, the beyond visual line of sight, the monitoring of wildlife. So there has definitely been an uptick in business.
The UAF-based center coordinates with entities in Oregon and Hawaii to operate the Pan-Pacific UAS Test Range Complex, one of seven sanctioned by the Federal Aviation Administration nationwide. Cahill says it's recently been expanded to include Midwest locations.
Kansas and Mississippi. What we found is people don't want to go test their unmanned aircraft more than a day's drive from where they're based. So by spreading out, we can bring more people into the Pan-Pacific fold.
This week's UAV meetings are happening at the Wedgewood Resort in Fairbanks tomorrow through Friday. I'm Dan Bross.